Okay, welcome to another episode of the Strength Training for Runners podcast with me, Tim Edgerton, and I'm back with Xavier O'Hare, who has already previously been on the podcast once before, along with Mac O'Malley, when we discussed all things running coaching, but Zav's back on his own again now, so quickly reintroduce Xavier for you. So he's got a strong background as a runner himself. He's a former England international, English Schools 1500 meter finalist, North of England 5K road champion previously. So great pedigree as a runner. And also in terms of his academic background, he's got an undergraduate degree in sports nutrition and has recently embarked upon his master's degree in sports nutrition at St. Mary's University as well. So we thought we'd get him back on and really just discuss all things nutrition for runners today. So breaking off a little bit from the strength side of things and you know, a little bit of a different episode to discuss nutrition for runners. So welcome back, Zav.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, so we just chatted a little bit off air, a little bit how things are going and stuff. So obviously you're still competing as a runner. So before we get into the nutrition side of things, do you just want to fill us in with, you know, how things are going on the running front and what your goals are going forwards with that?
Yeah, so I had a good summer on the track, was able to get a personal best in 1500 meters and able to have a consistent summer of racing, which was one of my main targets, and stay healthy. I had a little bit of a break after the summer period and then now kind of into the winter phase and looking to build upon what we did in the summer and mainly competing in some cross-country races, some road running, and yeah, really just trying to build a strong base moving forward over the next year and hopefully again keep things going the way they were and just build upon what I was doing, really.
Nice. So for cross, any specific cross countries lined up, like Liverpool maybe or
yeah,
further into the winter?
So I think for me this year, because I'm back at university doing my master's, I'm able to do the British University Championships, which are in February, or the books as it's called, and that's probably going to be one of my main aims, and that'll be around February next year. So hoping to kind of do my best in that and try and compete well for the university in my last year. That'll be the big aim, really. But I'll probably be looking at all the northern and the national championships and probably other bits that will be going on as well.
Excellent. And then going into the summer, 1500 the focus still, or where,
yeah,
where
I think so. I think I'm slowly figuring out a little bit, and I think the 1500 right now feels like an event that's working really well for me, and I really enjoy it in championships from the tactical perspective, but I think it's an event I feel quite comfortable doing, so I think I'll, at the minute, that'll be the one I'll be focusing on.
Good stuff. Oh, cool. So yeah, nutrition as well. So let's jump right in on that. So we've had a little back and forth over the last few days, and we were kind of thinking what topics can we cover? And we thought it'd be good to just kind of cover some general areas, which I guess in simple terms is just like, what should you be eating, maybe on like a day-to-day basis, and how should you fuel yourself, how much should you should be eating, things like that. But then we kind of looked at a few specific areas we could cover as well, things like pre-race fueling, post-race fueling, maybe a little bit on supplements, whether it be stuff you can take pre-training, pre-racing, or also like there's areas we can maybe look at from a prehab and rehab perspective as well. So that's kind of what we were thinking. But maybe if we start off with on the more general stuff, sort of how should runners be fueling themselves generally, and then we can work along maybe some of those other areas as we go.
Definitely. Yeah, I think the most important concept for runners and for people in general to understand is that the way you're working when you're eating is you're looking to achieve energy balance. And an energy balance is basically the amount of calories that you're eating and the amount of calories that you're burning. And in order to maintain that energy balance, those two numbers have to be roughly the same. And so for runners, it's really important that we're matching that demand of energy for the performance side of things, so that we're recovering, we're fueling for training. And I think in terms of then looking at breaking that down, it then is your macronutrients, so your carbohydrates, your proteins and your fats. And you're looking really to get a balance across all of them to do with the amount of quantity that you're consuming. But I think it's really important to identify that the individual who it is and what they need to consume will be based around the amount of exercise they're doing, the lifestyle they have, what they're doing. You know, is their job a job where they're on their feet 12 hours a day? Are they on a building site, or are they sat at a desk for 12 hours a day? And that's going to massively affect the amount of calories that are going out every day, and therefore the amount of calories you need to be taking in. So I think you're looking to get a balance of all of that. And when I work with people, I'm looking to see what those factors are, and that can build a picture around their lifestyle and what they need.
Yeah. And talking of balance as well, and like that energy balance that you particularly mentioned at the start, you know, lighter is better kind of thing is certainly a mindset that a lot of runners have, at least. Not necessarily, you know, to an extent it holds some truth, but it's also a dangerous road to go down, and, you know, thinking if I'm lighter, I'm faster. And so, yeah, there's a psychology element to this as well. I guess, how do we address where to sort of go with this in terms of, should athletes be looking to lose weight, should be looking to maintain weight? You know, is there an assessment that needs to be done when you're working with an athlete beforehand, or yeah, what are your thoughts on that?
Like you say, it's a challenging area because it's a very fine line, and to an extent the weight that you are does influence certain factors, but it's to an extent, and it's in the sense of how light are you with regards to then how healthy you are, because the minute you cross that line where your health is then being compromised as you begin to get lighter, you begin to then go the other way and it becomes a negative rather than a positive. I think for the majority of people who aren't at the top end elite level, the weight that they are shouldn't be their primary concern at all. I think there's much bigger things they can be focusing on, which will have a much bigger and more profound impact on their performance. I think if you are at that top level, there are assessments that can be done, body composition assessments, whether that's taking skin folds, you can calculate people's body fat percentage. And then from there, you can work out, well, this is perhaps where we need you to be, whether that's reducing your body fat by X amount of percent. And that might look to yield a small increase for this reason. But I think what I would advise for nearly all people is to stray away from their body weight, because I think there's other areas that should be focused on first. And this isn't saying don't focus on it at all, because I think it can definitely help if it's in the right way and then done in a healthy way and overlooked by someone who knows what they're doing, who can inform them of the right tools and the right things that are going to benefit them. But I think that's something that they need to have the conversation with, whether that's with a nutritionist, whether that's with a doctor, someone who knows the process of that. And I think those are the important factors when looking at weight loss. And I think in answer to the other question, I think it's really important that the young people are being conscious of their body weight. And I think that's both from a young age all the way until their 20s, when people are growing and going through that stage where it's really important they're eating enough to match the amount of exercise we're doing, because we do so much as young athletes. And I think making sure we're on top of what we're eating is going to be massively influential on performance and therefore all the other factors involved.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And then I guess the other side of the equation, the energy balance kind of thing is the how much you should be eating, and then there's also the what you should be eating. So yeah, well, I guess maybe we can talk about this more in like practical terms, like what does a good plate of food look like, or something like what does a balanced meal look like for a runner, or just generally?
Yeah, so I think in general it's about having the balance, and it's really hard for me to say exactly without knowing the individual, and that's why working with people like nutritionists and people who can calculate your personal needs can give you a much more detailed picture of the calories that you need to be consuming every day. But I mean, even as an example of what perhaps a runner could look to be consuming in a meal, you're looking to have the majority of a meal made up of carbohydrates, so roughly 50%. So for example, let's take pasta is one of the most common carbohydrates, most easily accessible, and I think you can then look to pair that with a protein, so perhaps about 30% of that total plate can then be a protein, and then about 20 center that can be your fats, and all these can be made up of in different ways. So let's take spaghetti bolognese as an option. You could have a nice plate of spaghetti, 50% spaghetti. You could then have your minced meat, and then your fats can be made up of your sauce. It can be in tomato sauce, and then the fats can come from the meat as well. It can then come from some cheese, and then you've got all your vegetables, which can go in that as well. So those types of meals on a very, very simple and basic level, it's just looking at dividing it so you have the correct quantities going into the right areas. And I think it's about having that balance across all of your meals across a day. And that then gives you the entire day of what good eating can come to, and ultimately good fueling for performance, because that's what we're looking to achieve when it comes to athletes. It's recovering from the last session and then fueling for the preceding session, whether that's that day or the next day or even for races.
Great stuff. So and you mentioned like percentages a little bit. Is it generally when we see these percentage recommendations, is that in terms of percentage of calories they're coming from, or is it more of percentage of the volume it takes them upon a plate?
It's I would say it's probably more the volume of things that are going onto the plate. So each of the macronutrients yield a certain amount of calories, and some more than others. So really it's the actual quantity of food that you're looking to be consuming within that carbohydrate or protein or fat, and that will then give you your total plate, and that will give you the meal that you're presented with.
I think that's useful info, because we often see like percentages being presented, but possibly without that background information of what does that percentage mean? Is it calories? Is it volume? So that's useful to have. Great. So I think that's fairly well sort of covered, you know, given us a good basis on in general terms on, you know, how much should we eat and what should we eat. And I think that's a great start. And we can maybe start moving into some of the specific areas now, things like pre-race fuel. In fact, shall we start with pre-race fueling? Cover that a little bit?
Yeah, definitely. So I think pre-race fueling is a really interesting area, because you will probably have slight differences in what you're eating depending on your event. So whether that's going to be a 400 meter runner all the way up to a marathon ultra distance runner. But what I would say in general for everyone is you're probably looking to tweak what you're eating to increase the amount of carbohydrates you're eating and reduce the amount of protein and fats you're eating. And the main reason for that is that you need to be getting sufficient energy for your event. But then you're also looking to remove anything that could be giving you distress when you're actually competing. So when I talk about distress, I'm talking about stomach problems, whether that's stomach ache or needing to go to the loo. These are the last things you want to have to do during your event. And so typically for a pre-race fueling, the person, again, depending on the event, is probably going to be having between 5 and 12 grams per kilogram of carbohydrates per day. And again, that's a massive range, but that's roughly what people will be somewhere in there having. And then you're looking to kind of slightly up your daily level in the days prior, so that you're making sure you have enough carbohydrate fueling. And then I think specifically the day before, when it's about maybe 3 to 5 hours, when you're looking to have that last meal, you're looking to have around 140 to 330 grams of carbohydrates somewhere in there. And that's going to be the right amount that are going to give you the fuel that you need for your event. And then kind of into the event itself, depending again on the length of your event, I think anything under an hour. So whether that's depending on how fast you're going, but it could be 10K, half marathon, it all depends on the individual, but whatever's kind of less than an hour, you really don't need to be taking anything on at all. I think if anything, you're more likely to just inhibit and perhaps reduce your capacity for performance by trying to consume something that isn't going to necessarily benefit you during the event. But I think once you go over that hour mark, you can really start to see the benefits of in-race fueling. And at that point, it all becomes the key to get the carbohydrates in. So kind of the research at the minute suggests around 70 grams per hour of carbohydrates. And most people will take that in a gel, a bar, it might be in a drink. It really just depends on the individual, what you feel comfortable with. But I think emphasizing the point that all these things should be trialed and tested in training so that you can find the balance that works for you, so that you're not getting an upset stomach, and that you feel correctly fueled and hydrated and everything like that in race is going to be, you know, the most essential points. But I think, and then kind of afterwards, you're really looking to replenish the carbohydrates you took on, and that's going to help with the recovery process. And you're really looking to just resynthesize everything so that you're, yeah, instigating the recovery process and making sure you're able to then crack on and carry on again the next days or however long afterwards.
Excellent. So we'll try and dissect some of what you've said there a little bit. So I think First point I'm going to try and pick up on is this, that sort of hour mark divide, if you like. So under an hour, don't really worry about fueling during the event itself. Over an hour, it's something you need to focus on, and it's going to be carbohydrate-based fueling. Now, you can correct me if I'm not up to date on this, but my understanding is that it's possibly best to have carbohydrate fueling strategies which involve multiple different types of carbohydrate when you are fueling during a race that lasts over an hour. So I don't know what the best sources would be, but let's say fructose and sucrose or whatever it may be, you know, but two different types of carbohydrate rather than just coming from one. Is am I on the money there? And if so, I'm sure I've not mentioned the correct carbs there. So if I am on the money, like what should we be looking at?
Yeah, so yeah, like you're correct with what you're saying. You can definitely get more than one type of carbohydrates, and they will have slightly different reactions in the way that they're producing their energy. At the minute, the best combination is a mixture of fructose and glucose, and together they're kind of what I would say is the optimal forms of carbohydrate fueling. And they're going to supply you with that fast release of energy, but also then sustain it over the period of time. And I think that's the best balance for someone who is performing a longer race, a marathon, for example, is looking to achieve. And so as long as you have that balance, you're going to be sustaining the energy that you need for the duration of the race. So yeah, you're spot on with what you're saying, Tim.
And is there any benefit? Obviously, gels are... I guess this is possibly an elite versus a masses issue to an extent as well, because obviously if you're on an elite start line, you can get drinks that are formulated for your requirements and they're laid out specifically for you. If you're not an elite and you're running with the masses, you don't have that luxury, and so you're more likely to be consuming gels. But putting that issue aside, is there a benefit of drinks over gels or vice versa?
Not particularly, no. I do think it's very individual. Some people will argue and say that they prefer gels over drinks because they're easier to consume, or vice versa. People say that they find the taste of gels leaves a bad taste in their mouth, or feels like it needs to be washed down with water, and so they're better off taking it in a drink form anyway. So for me and my experience of what people have said, it's much more individualized with how you react. And also the big point, which I think is the most significant, is how it fits on your stomach. What makes you feel like you can continue running at your peak performance without having any kind of gastrointestinal issues, anything that's going to reduce your ability to run as quick as you are. So that's why I kind of go back to the point of making sure everything's trialed and tested in training, so that when it comes to race day, there's no concerns about how something's going to react and not trying something for the first time. But again, like you say, with the elite population, they have the luxury of things being handed to them, so they could have both. They could have a small quantity of gels and drink, or just one, whatever they prefer. Whereas I think for the masses, the gels are going to be the one they can carry in a pouch or on a belt or something along those lines. So it generally tends to be for the masses that it is the gel, and again, they can supply equal amounts of carbohydrates as the drinks. It's just does come down to preference.
Cool. And I guess you can, you know, you can practice in training as well to determine that preference. You know, you can set up fueling stations on your long run or whatever the case may be, or, you know, whether it's at your car, loops back to your car to so you can take stuff on board and figure out what's best for you.
Yeah, I would say definitely practicing that. I mean, if you can have the luxury of having someone come on a bike with you, whether that's a family member, a friend, a partner, whoever, and you can have them pass you the drinks or the gels, or like you say, you could find a loop in your local area and have it by your car and come back every however many miles, take on the drink or the gel and practice it that way. But there's definitely ways around it, whether you've got someone to help you or on your own, but it's definitely something I would do, because I think the last thing you want to do is have nerves going into a race around how your body's going to react to what you're taking. And that could be a massive thing when you've done so much preparation for a marathon, you know, across a 12 to 16 week period, and it comes down to how your stomach reacts on race day. It's all about taking as many variables out of the equation that could possibly decrease your performance. So I think that's definitely something to consider.
Well, so if we maybe backtrack a little bit, because we've covered the sort of racing fueling strategy in reasonable detail there. So if we backtrack a bit to going back to the pre-race stuff. Just a thought I had, maybe I can, like, if I can cast my memory back to it, talk you two through how I would have probably fueled for like a 1500 meter race back in the day. Mm-hmm. And you could dissect that, say that's good, bad, whatever. Or obviously, you know, we've already mentioned there's, it's an individual thing anyway. So, but it might just to visualize what certain things look like, it might be useful. So I guess, you know, you talked about the night before as well as the morning and then maybe your final meal beforehand. So for me, I would have probably just had a fairly normal meal, like whatever, lasagna, spaghetti bolognese, or some chicken and pasta, whatever. It's just something fairly normal the night before. And then if we assume maybe it's an lunchtime, early afternoon race, I'd have probably just had a bowl of porridge in the morning. And then just a small pre-race meal beforehand, which typically for me would be three slices of bread with jam on it. And that would be it. About an hour and a half before a race, I would take that. So that's what I would do. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I think, so we've got to look at specifically the event. The 1500 is pretty short. Most people, like yourself, you're going to be, it's only a few minutes and then it's all over. So the concern of the fuel and how much you're taking kind of goes down as the event gets short, because you really don't need the longevity of the fueling. But what you're making sure and what you need to be doing, which is what you were doing, is you're looking to top things up in the morning. So you talked about the three slices of bread with jam. That's a great source of your glucose, your quick supply of energy, and that's really just going to top up those stores. Your body naturally has a lot of stored glycogen, which the meal you had the night before will have completely filled that up. And then the morning of, like when you said there, you're having some toast with some jam, you're really just looking to top things up to the top. But and I think as well at that point, you're looking to make sure you're not having anything that can upset your stomach. So you're keeping it simple. You're having simple toast. You're having it with jam. Nothing that's going to cause you any kind of distress when you're in race, because that's the most important thing. You're running at a really significant speed and you're going to be bouncing up and down and your stomach's getting shaken about. So I think the only thing I'd probably add, or perhaps maybe slightly change, is when you're taking that on. For me personally, and what I would kind of recommend based on the research, is to have that last meal probably 2 to 4 to 5 hours outside of when you're racing. And again, that's so individual. You said that you could do it an hour and a half and be fine. And I know loads of people that can do that and even less time and be fine. So if I was to be nitpicking and really look at the details, that would be my suggestion. But again, if you feel fine racing, then that's also a massive part of it. What makes you feel comfortable when you're on the start line? And if that's the best thing for you, then that's what you should go with.
Yeah, and I guess that comes into the trial and error as well. So you've got your evidence base there and you've got what I'm used to. And then if I was still an athlete working and you were working with me on your nutrition, perhaps you'd advise me to just make small tweaks to the time frame and see how I respond to sort of different time periods out from the race, perhaps.
Yeah, you're dead right. I think if you're, like you said, about an hour and a half, it's then, well, the evidence suggests this, and this is your experience of what you're doing. So maybe can we look to combine the two to see if we can get you to be racing any quicker. Is it going to be at 2 hours that you can, you know, are you feeling a bit more fresh, a bit more bouncy, or not? Do you feel like you slump because that's too long? Or, you know, we can experiment, and that's where you have to take the research, but then apply it to the individual. And that's the key. It's not something that's set in stone. It's something that has to be flexible and malleable. And you've got to look at the individual needs of someone like yourself and seeing what works best.
Great stuff. And then the other thing that I would also do pre-race, back when I was racing, was a small supplementation regime. So I would supplement on caffeine pre-race.
Yeah.
I had a period where I tried beta-alanine, which was more of a race. I think I dosed that daily during the race season for a kind of a buffering effect, but it was for benefits during sort of the race, I guess. And but I would take, from memory, I would take the beta-alanine maybe an hour or so before racing and before training. And essentially, that was my pre-race supplement routine, but caffeine, beta-alanine. But there's other stuff out there as well. I know there's been a lot of research on beetroot juice. for nitric oxide benefits and things like that. And there's probably other stuff that I'm not aware of as well. Yeah, maybe just give us your thoughts on any possible benefits of supplement strategies as well, pre-race.
Yeah, definitely. So we can break those down. So the first one, caffeine. Caffeine's probably the most popular and the most widely used because it's the most accessible, it's the most researched and the most well-known. And caffeine is a great option because it's a stimulant. And so this is something that can really significantly increase performance. It's been shown and its benefits, and most people will take it on a daily basis anyway. And it is normally taken as coffee, but a lot of people also take it when performing as a caffeine pill. And it's just a much more simple option when coffee's not accessible, or you just want something that you can get in your system more accessibly. And the way that caffeine works is you consume it roughly, like you say, about an hour before, and then normally at about 60 minutes, that's when your big spike in caffeine is, and you'll get those feelings of increased kind of energy, awareness, and it might be cognitive improvements, or it might then be a bit more of a feeling of energy. And those things have been shown to be very evidence-based. And I think most people kind of going on my recommendation are taking about 3 to 6 milligrams per kilogram of caffeine. So for most people, it might be an espresso or a double espresso. But again, that's all based on your tolerance levels. And I think the only kind of caveat for that is you then have to look at your stomach issues as well. So most people will have experienced when you take a coffee, you might need to go to the toilet after. So again, it's playing around with what your tolerance is, how much you find that you can take without having any problems, and looking to take that before. Some people, again, don't take it and have no problems, but there is a lot of good research which backs that, which, again, probably would have supported your performance very well. So that's kind of the basis of caffeine. And then moving on to beta-alanine, which is the second one you said, which kind of coincides with something that's kind of becoming more prevalent at the minute called sodium bicarbonate. I'm not sure how much you will have seen, but they're quite closely linked. And both of these are classed as ergogenic aids, which are things that help you when you're performing. So anything that helps you with performance is more or less classed as an ergogenic aid. We can class caffeine under there and beetroot juice, which we'll go on to. And the function of both of them is to increase the buffering of lactic acid. And lactic acid is something that pretty much all runners, mainly your middle distance and shorter distance runners, will have experienced, that feeling of your legs filling up with lactate, feeling like you're running through treacle and you're absolutely just not moving anywhere. So when we take these supplements, they buffer something called hydrogen ions, and that helps give your body a higher capacity for lactate buffering, and with it, hopefully some performance benefits as well. So at the minute, most of the research suggests beta-alanine is best for events around 1 to 10 minutes. So that's your middle distance events, kind of anything from 400 meters all the way up to about 5K. Really, that's kind of your ideal zone for that. And yeah, you mentioned there that you were taking beta-alanine most days. So for beta-alanine, the recommendation is to take that every day for a period of about 4 to 10 weeks to get some kind of performance effect. And yeah, it's normally about 3 to 6 grams that people take a day over a period of 4 to 10 weeks, and that shows the most performance benefit. But I think as well, I don't know if you would have experienced it, Tim, but one of the big side effects known for it is a feeling of tingling, or kind of a sensation of a bit scratchy and a bit itchy. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but some people find it uncomfortable and a bit irritating to have before a race. So that's kind of something to bear in mind with it. But like you say, taking that before a race is definitely great for performance.
Good stuff. Yeah, I definitely noticed that tingling feeling. And I personally quite enjoyed it. I found it almost reassuring because I knew I was kind of taking the real thing, if you like. So for me, I didn't mind it. I noticed you mentioned sodium bicarbonate as well. And in my earlier days, I did try some sodium bicarbonate pre-race, but in a very crude form. I think basically putting some powder, so literally some powder, yeah, sodium bicarbonate powder in water and mixing it, and it tasted horrible. And then if you get the dosage slightly wrong, it has all kinds of nasty effects. And I one time did get the dosage wrong and was violently sick pre-race. And I don't think I ever did it again after that. But then I moved on to beta-alanine after that. But I believe there's like more nuanced systems for taking it out there these days, which I'm not up to date on what they are, but they make it sort of safer from a side effects perspective. And so it's possibly something, like you said, it's something that's being used a bit more now, so that's probably the reason why. So something worth considering, and something that I wanted to ask you what your thoughts are on would be to, because beta-alanine and sodium bicarbonate are kind of the same type of thing. They're sort of buffering agents, if you like. So one thing I wanted to sort of get your opinion on was using both, potentially both beta-alanine and sodium bicarbonate together to sort of increase the effects, if you like. So they're both kind of buffering agents, if you like. That's the benefit of them. But I don't know if there is any information on this. You'll be more up to date and be able to say if there is or there isn't. But I'm not personally aware of any information saying you can take both and it'll magnify the effects, or there's only kind of a benefit in taking one or the other. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah. So to be totally honest, I have not come across lots of research that has looked at taking one, the other, or all of them together. My point of view would probably be that there is benefit in taking both together up to a point. And I think the key is what is the amount that you can take personally without having those side effects, which might then decrease your performance. So like you said, when you got the dosage completely wrong, made you feel quite sick. Some people have different stomach problems. Some people feel worse because of it, and some people end up feeling sick like you did. So I think you can take both, and both have good value and should increase performance, but it's a very individualized thing that some people don't feel comfortable with, whether it's making them feel sick or any kind of adverse reaction, which is then going to make your performance worse. And so I think what I would probably suggest is taking one at a time. So try beta-alanine. How does that make you feel? Okay, it makes me feel quite good. Then, right, let's try sodium bicarbonate. How do I feel taking that? Right, I feel quite good. Okay, let's try taking them both together at a safe dosage, which then to look at the effects of that and then see, right, oh, am I feeling better? Am I feeling worse? Or am I feeling the same? And from that, you can weigh up if there's value in taking them together for you. And I think it is a bit of a trial and error process, but as long as you're staying within the safe guidelines of what's being advised to take, I don't see any reason why taking them together might not have some performance improvements.
I think that's great advice, actually. Yeah, and I think that applies to a lot of things, not even just within nutrition, but training as well. Like when you add several different training elements to your program that you've never incorporated before, it's like, how do you know how it's all panning out and playing out for you? Whereas if you just incorporate one thing at a time and then see how you respond to one thing at a time, then it's a more methodological approach. And I think that's great advice.
I think you're right, and I think everything in nutrition, but then outside of that in performance and just in general, we can take the research and we can look at what the research says, but putting it into practice, it's a bit of a trial and error with the individual of how do you feel, and that can really determine what's going to be right or wrong for you. Because you can normally talk to someone about anything in nutrition and one person will have had a positive experience and one person a negative experience. So making sure you do trial things, I think, is really valuable, and doing it before race day, that's the key, because you don't want to leave anything to chance. So that would definitely be my advice.
Okay, great stuff. So the only other, I guess, pre-race supplement that I've got on my radar that I wanted to ask you about was beetroot juice. And I guess not necessarily just beetroot juice, but I guess supplements that elevate nitric oxide within the blood, because I think that's essentially what the benefit of beetroot juice is. But if you can talk about that.
Yeah. So beetroot juice is an interesting one. It's become a lot more popular over the last kind of 5 to 10 years and massively prevalent as like you say, a source of nitrate. it's really high in nitrate, and nitrate's great because it increases the blood flow that we have naturally within our body. So when we're performing and we're getting more tired, the more blood flow we have going around the body, the more supply of energy we have, and the longer we can go for in theory. So that's the kind of concept behind it. And most people tend to be taking beetroot juice about 3 hours before exercise. And most people, again, will take it. I'm sure you might have seen the shots that are quite popular at the minute, beetroot shots. And I think they're about 70 to 150 milliliters. And that's essentially like a quick shot of almost like an espresso sized shot of beetroot juice, very concentrated. And that's going to give you the nitrate supply, again, that you can have for exercise. But in my experience as well, I have tried taking beetroot juice and I'm not a big fan of the taste of it. So I find it quite difficult to stomach before a race, you know, when I'm quite nervous anyway, having to take something that I'm not really in the mood to take or like the taste of anyway, it can be a bit challenging. And keeping that down for me was something that I found difficult. So I kind of cut that out of my pre-race practice. So it can be useful and people do find benefits from it. And it has been shown to be useful. But again, I think going back to the point of all of these ergogenic aids is if you're taking every single one of them, there's risks to how your stomach's going to feel. There's risks to how you're going to feel before a race. And so perhaps trialing certain ones and seeing which ones work for you and give you some kind of performance benefit is going to be the most effective way to find out what's best. But beetroot juice is definitely one that's backed. And I think any way that you can increase your nitrate, even outside of exercise, taking beetroot juice on a daily basis is something that's going to be good for you, you know, just from a health perspective, not just for a performance perspective. So definitely one to consider.
Okay, yeah, that's interesting. I haven't really considered it as a health supplement, as if you like. I'd only really considered it from the perspective of something you might consume pre-race. Health benefits.
Yeah, no,
as well.
I think making sure that you do look at it as well from that kind of perspective, it is something that's really important. And a lot of people will opt for actual whole beetroots. You know, you can put them in salads, you can make soups with them, you can do all sorts and play around with them. And for me, I've never really liked the taste of them. So they've not been a massive thing that I've included kind of into my daily eating habits. But I definitely see value in having them if it's something you enjoy, and definitely a lot of benefit from that health perspective. So yeah. Definitely great.
Yeah, good stuff. So is there anything else I've missed out, would you say? Is it from a sort of pre-race supplement, is there anything that's got research behind it, or is that those the main stuff?
Well, I think we kind of mentioned from, obviously with this being the strength podcast, we talked a little bit about collagen beforehand.
Yes.
And looking at the influence of what you can do with your nutrition to help with injuries and also then with strength training. So they kind of all go hand in hand. A lot of the time when someone's injured, they're going to be focusing on their prehab and their rehab and things that are going to be helping them to get back fit and get back strong, or just get strong in general. So collagen is one of those that can be really beneficial. It's an essential, it's a type of protein, and it essentially maintains the tendons, the tissues, and the skin within the body. So for people that have had experiences of injuries, whether it's tendinitis is often a common one in runners, or if people have had tears, the torn a tendon or anything kind of around tendons in athletics or in strength training, anything for that matter, taking collagen as a supplement beforehand is going to help increase your collagen synthesis, and that's going to help rebuild those tendons and make them stronger and increase recovery time if you have had an injury, or again, it's going to be increasing the recovery time after training. So again, with collagen, the advice is to be taking that 1 hour before exercise, and anywhere from a dosage of 5 to 15 grams of collagen per day has shown performance benefits. So that's definitely something that, you know, will definitely help if people look to take it.
Good stuff. Yeah, I think it. My understanding is what you've just said there, that it is important that it's a pre-training supplement. And my understanding behind this is that essentially our tendons have quite a poor blood supply as a rule, but They often act like sponges when they're working, so they get stretched and then they, you know, stretch and then shorten repeatedly during exercise. And they kind of, during that stretching and shortening, they kind of soak stuff up that's in the bloodstream, like acting a bit like a sponge. So if you can provide the bloodstream ahead of time with collagen, then they are likely to then absorb that collagen in a way that they wouldn't do if you consumed it further out from training and exercise.
Yeah, I think you're definitely along the right lines with that. I think the way you described it as a sponge, I almost think of it as a web or a net. And it's a net system that when you have damage to the tendons, whether that's from an injury or from actual training, you almost get these tears in the web, in the net. And when you take the collagen beforehand, it's going to help promote the resynthesis that's going on in that area, making it stronger, making the web and the net more closely bind together, and with it, you know, improving performance or helping support your rehab and getting you back going where you want to be.
Does it matter what type of exercise you're doing? Is it like, does it have to be, can we go out running, or should it be more strength based, or is it all good stuff to do, like after you've had an hour, sort of an hour-ish, yeah, after the collagen supplementation?
Yeah, I mean, it is all good stuff, and all good stuff will contribute in some form or another. I think the general recommendation is to be taking it before some kind of strength training. So in my experience, taking it before something where it's going to tear down those tendons and the collagen is going to help to act to bring it back together, then that's going to be the best way to do it. And of course, depending on the injury, that might not be what you're going to be doing. So, you know, if you're going to be, if you've had a serious tendon injury and then you're taking collagen, you might not be doing any rehab on it at the time, as you might be resting. But I think it's something that when you're doing that rehabilitation process and you're trying to strengthen back up the area, that would be my guidance with when to take it, because I think that's when you're going to get the most performance benefits.
I've actually recommended a couple of people to consume collagen for the purpose we've been discussing, and I've tried it myself as well. And going back to what you were saying about beetroot juice and some of the other supplements on taste, for me, the supplements I've taken, the collagen supplements, have not had a nice taste to them. But I'm also aware that I think the evidence seems to suggest that if you haven't consumed any vitamin C that day, or not enough vitamin C, then the benefits might not be as good. I don't know if that's correct, but I believe there might be some research stating that. So what I've suggested to people, and I've tried myself, is just putting effervescent vitamin C tablet into the so bit of collagen powder, get a bit of water, mix it up, put an effervescent vitamin C. So you've got that vitamin C, so you've kind of ticked that off. You know, you consume it with some vitamin C on it, and it improves the taste as well.
I think that's a great idea. A lot of what we're trying to do with the supplements we take and the foods we're eating is making everything enjoyable. And the more enjoyable things are, the more likely you are to stick to them and make them a habit. I think if you're forcing yourself to take collagen or beetroot juice, anything that isn't going to be tasting nice for you personally, then it's going to make it much harder to stick to that. And so, like you say, with something like collagen, if where you're not enjoying the taste, having you could even do, you know, cordial or anything that's going to adapt the taste of it to make it a bit more palatable. Or in your case, taking a vitamin C tablet with it, which again, you're kind of getting a two-in-one, you're getting your vitamin C and you're getting your collagen. So that's what you're really looking to do with all those types of supplements, and broadly across your nutrition as well, is why I encourage people to look at what can you do to make your nutrition better, but how are you doing it? Are you taking the right types of supplements at the right times, but then are you taking and enjoying the meals that you're having? Are you making great tasting food? And I think that's equally as important, because it shouldn't have to be a chore. It should be something that you enjoy the process, and you know, you find that you're getting the reward in the at the same time. And I think that's really key.
Yeah, because it has to be sustainable, doesn't it? It has to, you know, if it's not enjoyable, it's not sustainable, essentially.
No, of course. And if you are wanting to improve yourself in any aspect of your nutrition, you actually want to make sure you're enjoying it. We eat, as humans, a lot of food every day, and we have so much food accessible to us, so many options to make amazing flavors and amazing things. And I think experimenting with that to find the things that work for you and your nutritional needs is going to be what's going to make it sustainable. And that's often what is in the way and the barrier to people making progress is how can we do it over a long period of time and not just next week or next month.
Anything else we want to really look at? We could maybe look a little bit more at post-race fueling. I think that's possibly the main area we've not covered in real depth. So yeah, obviously touch on anything else you'd like to, but that's something that we could touch on from my perspective that we've not really covered yet.
Post-race fueling, kind of as we briefly went over, it's really just looking to get back into the body what's been taken out when you've been exercising. So getting in a good post-race meal and making sure you're getting a good balance of carbohydrates and proteins. You're looking to rebuild through the protein resynthesis that has all been broken down through exercise and restoring the carbohydrate levels to what they need to be and refilling the muscle glycogen of the body. So those are all the really key factors. And I think an important area to touch on, which is often overlooked in nutrition, is your hydration. And I think as much as in-race hydration is important, your post-race hydration is really key as well. And I know when people have finished a long race and it might have been their goal race, it's their time to celebrate and it's their time to enjoy themselves with family and friends. And I would never discourage people to do that. But I do think it's important to remember that you will have lost a lot of fluids through sweat as you're exercising, and making sure you replenish that slowly over the hours and days after is going to be really influential in how quickly you can get back into your routine of things. So I think those are the kind of key points to remember after competition.
So on the hydration front, is it important maybe to drink electrolytes as part of that, electrolyte drinks, or is it simply a case of getting the fluids in however you do it?
Yeah, I would probably say to get a mix, really. Water is obviously going to be the most key part to all of that, but like you say, you will lose a lot of fluid when you're exercising, and within that fluid you will need to be replenishing the electrolytes that can be made up of that. So you can get electrolyte powders, you can even make a homemade electrolyte drink yourself, so whether that's with a glass of water, a little bit of salt and some cordial, you can get your own kind of homemade, very inexpensive version of an electrolyte drink. And that is going to be the main part of the sodium that's going to be lost when you're sweating. You're going to get the salts replacing that. So that's the most important bit. But I think it's a balance, and making sure you have a bit of both is going to be the most effective way.
Yeah. And that's a great tip as well. Because some athletes are on a budget, of course. So yeah, a little homemade electrolyte drink is essentially, you seem to be saying, almost as effective as something you can buy from the shops.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the shop bought ones might be relatively well priced, but like you say, for students, for people with families, when you're on a budget, part of what I like to try and make sure is important is looking at how we can make things cost effective. And if you have a big budget, you can go above and beyond with what you want to do. But how can you make sure that you're eating in the right ways sustainably on a cost effective way? And things like that are just little things which will help over time and play their part in your hydration, but really can be cost effective. So that's equally, something that's going to be really useful for people.
I think we've covered a lot of ground there, actually. We've covered pre-race, post-race, general nutrition as well as all kinds of supplement strategies. So it's probably a good place to wrap things up, in fairness. And so I think what I'd like to close things up with is just any of the listeners the opportunity to sort of reach out to you and get help from you. So if you can let us know, I think your business is called Apex Nutrition Performance. Is that correct?
Yeah. That's correct.
You've got Instagram, is Apex. If you type in Apex Nutrition Performance, you'll find that.
Yeah, on Instagram it's just Apex Nutrition Performance, and then same online. There's a website where you can get a bit more information and probably find out a bit more about what I'm offering and what maybe would be best for you. But again, I think I'd encourage anyone, if they have any questions with their nutrition or any questions broadly about kind of their health and anything really, I think I'd be happy to answer and give them advice as best I can, because that's what what I think is key.
Yeah, no, you've got a range of services available as well, haven't you? So you've got, I believe, sort of ongoing support on a month-to-month basis, as well as kind of one-off packages to maybe like drill down your pre-race nutrition routine, if you like, as a specific example of sort of a one-off package to nail that down.
Yeah, because I think for some people, what they need and what they probably benefit the most from is the accountability element of nutrition. So for some people, it's having that meal plan, it's having the calories and everything explained to them, but then having someone there to check in on them and to make sure we're keeping things up to date with, do we need to make changes, is it too challenging, or are you finding it that we're not making enough progress because you need to adapt things in a certain way. And I think that accountability element for some people is the main bit, but then I know for other people, they don't want that at all. They want all the information and to go off and just take it. And I think giving people the opportunity and the option to have access to both of them was really something that I thought about. And I know from kind of the non-elite all the way to the elite standard, there's going to be variations in the needs of the people. And I think for me, I wanted to be able to cover that all. So that was definitely something that was at the forefront of my mind.
Yeah, and I think it's really valuable that you are offering both those options. So yeah, I'll encourage everyone to go and check you out. And yeah, get in touch with Zav if you want to optimize your nutrition or any aspect of your nutrition. Not necessarily the whole package, but certain aspects, or indeed the whole package. You know, get in touch with Zav and just reach out to him. You know, send him a message and get the ball rolling that way. Cool.
Really appreciate your time, Tim. Thank you.
And I appreciate you coming on again. It's been brilliant to chat all things nutrition. So thank you very much. And we'll speak soon.
Cheers. Thanks, Tim.
Cheers.